Hello, Lizzie.
Hi, Casper. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well. I just watched Wayne's World.
Thank you so much for watching it, for agreeing to watch it.
Thank you so much for suggesting it. Really, thank you. I can't thank you enough. Or too much.
You hadn't seen it before?
So, full disclosure, I had seen it before when I was but a bairn. And I couldn't remember loads of it. Obviously remembered Schwing and all of that. But loads of it are completely forgotten. And really weirdly, I think when I saw it, I was so innocent that I didn't know that Schwing referred to them getting boners.
Yeah, I did. I think I saw it in the cinema with my dad when it came out. And so I had
cool
no,
dad.
Yeah, very cool dad. So I had no idea about like the gratuitous sex scene. I was just like, what is that? Like, there was so much in it that I just didn't get. And it's really fun watching it now. But then it is the film that I've seen more than any other film, I think.
But so there's so much to say about Wayne's World.
Well, should we introduce what we're talking about? What we're doing.
Yeah.
Like, really good idea.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. I'm Elizabeth Sankey.
And I'm Casper Salmon.
And we're doing a podcast. This has been 3 days in the planning.
It was so much planning.
It was basically a Facebook message with lots of like big blue thumbs.
Yes. Although I have a nagging suspicion that you just want to do a podcast because you want to talk to me but can't be bothered to leave your house.
That's right. That's exactly it. You got it.
Well, that's cool.
And then I was like, what is the what's my angle? What's the hot take? And then I realised that Casper's what I consider to be quite highbrow, or definitely more highbrow than me. Like, I feel like you watch more documentaries or something, things that make people highbrow, whereas I think I'm quite lowbrow in comparison to you. Like, I can't imagine you, I would never text you and say, hey, Cass, because I don't call you Cass. Hey, Cass, do you want to go and see Star Trek? But if I did want to go and see, like, a pretentious talk, be the first name I'd call.
This is going well. So to explain the concept, you make me watch something that you consider lowbrow.
Yeah.
Or that just straight up is lowbrow. And I make you watch something highbrow, or that I consider highbrow, and then we talk about it, right?
I think that's what that Facebook chat decided, yeah.
Yeah, that's the concept.
That's the concept.
But here's the thing, is you've really fucked me over because I can only sound like a dick in this setup.
That is true. But no, because you can come to the understanding that there's actually value in the common muck that I impose upon you. And then you'll like have learned a lesson, whereas I'm the one that's like really stupid and...
No, because you get to sound like the funky one who's in touch with popular culture while I say things like, oh, people are so stupid using emojis. And then you get to look really cool by having seen Clueless a million times and also being able to talk about my pretentious crap that I inflict on you. Whereas I just look like a scold and a nag.
I don't understand. Do you have a problem with this?
No, absolutely not. It's wonderful. Let's do it.
I feel like there's something you're not saying.
No.
This is subtext.
And now, without further ado, let's do that.
Okay, have you got your... I thought Casper sent me a really good theme tune, a jingle.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So do you want to start us off? So you've got to... So,
just teach me it. We'll cut this out.
I'm going to sing You Are So Lowbrow and you've got to sing You Are So Highbrow and then we'll harmonise on the second bit.
I'm so sing you are so lowbrow.
Yeah, and then we'll harmonise on Will We Ever See Eye to Eye. Ready?
Okay.
You are so low. Go on. Okay, who's starting?
Let's just do that later.
Okay.
Insert jingle here. You are so highbrow.
You are so lowbrow.
Will we ever see eye to eye?
Should we talk about Wayne's World and then not have time to get on to my highbrow film, and we'll do that some other time?
No, we're going to be really strict and we're just going to do a small amount of time on Wayne's World and then a small amount of time on Karen Person, because I don't want to waste people's time.
I guess so. I've got so much more to say about Wayne's World, your pick, than about my pick. Let's carry on.
What were your... I mean, were you watching it thinking, I'm better than this?
Yes, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was watching it, I was just thinking, there aren't that many jokes in this film. It's not wham bam comedy. It's just sort of supposed to be kind of enjoyable through its atmospherics. And I was sort of only mildly getting into its kind of situational setup.
Wow, because I think it has like some of the best lines ever. But then again, I did watch it for the first time as an 11-year-old, so.
Yeah, so me too. It did have some really good lines and I wrote a few of them down, but I do think they were few and far between, or far and few between, whichever the way round.
Oh, please share your best lines from Wayne's World. My favourite was when
Wayne is questioning the head of the sponsor of his new show, the uptight corporate twat.
Benjamin.
And the sponsor of his show, the arcades guy. Yeah, Noah Ark, or whatever. And he just asks him a question, and then kind of parenthetically Mike Myers goes, that was due to that little skirmish in the Middle East, yes?
Yeah.
he says unresolved skirmish in the Middle East.
I love that you found the one bit of highbrow.
What?
You found the one bit of highbrow in Wayne's World.
Yeah.
They referenced...
to something historical and ongoing, yeah.
My name is Wayne Campbell. I live in Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. Excellent.
I think that one of my favourite things about this film is Rob Lowe in general.
Yes.
Just how big his suit is. Like every
Oh my goodness.
He's drowning in it. Like, I don't know if he lost a lot of weight. Yeah.
It's amazing. In one scene, he looks like mid-transition Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl. It's amazing. It's exactly the same suit.
I've heard that Eddie Redmayne actually based his look for that film on Rob Lowe as Benjamin in Wayne's World.
I hasten to add that both are extremely good-looking and great-looking in their respectively enormous suits.
Yeah.
But Rob Lowe has some kind of... It's like a satin shirt and some kind of Catherine Hepburn pants. It's amazing.
The orange shirt. I know the exact one you're talking about.
Yeah. Also, there's a weird bit where he says literally in exactly the same way that he says literally in his popular TV show Parks and Recreation.
Literally?
Yeah, literally. He says it like that. And yeah. I was like, whoa, time travel.
Shows that he's not a Daniel Day-Lewis, is he? I don't think he stayed in character on set.
How much time did he spend in the record industry before filming? That's what I'd like to know.
Got lost somewhere at Sony for 3 years.
Where's Rob Lowe going? Oh, he was just producing. He was just producing like a song by the Cheeky Girls.
My favourite, person getting into character by being sort of in disguise in the location or in a suitable location is Renee Zellweger did it for Bridget Jones. Just loved she went method by going to like a British work place and was like, everybody eats cake here.
And then did she go to like an all bar one and order
probably
a double shot of vodka?
Is that what people drink? in all bar
I
one.
Don't know. I don't know. In Wayne's World, I was watching it and I was thinking reasonably happily, because this is a pet peeve of mine, hey, there hasn't been that much gay panic so far.
Okay, I was interested in your take on this.
Yeah, so revisiting all those comedies from the past, I always have this slight fear of, oh, fuck, when's the gay panic going to set in? And there hadn't been that much. And then Wayne, played by Mike Myers, asks his friend the policeman, who has previously shown a predilection for this procedure, to insert a finger up Rob Lowe's asshole. As punishment when they stop his car. And later on, Rob Lowe walks towards Wayne's house in pain from his bum.
Yeah, he's got bum pain.
It's from bum pain. And now, I don't know how you feel about rape as a comedy trope. myself, like, I don't know. I've never seen a funny rape.
I've never seen one. I'm holding out.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen it yet.
No, you never know.
Fingers crossed. I think, I definitely think that was, and I remember that was something that when I've watched this, I'm just not to like make past me sound really right on, but I remember being like, what is this? This seems strange. Like the whole, just the, it's so unnecessary to have
that. why would you do that? And there's always that scene, it's like in fucking Shawshank, like, don't worry, we're gonna get this guy back in the most degrading way possible.
Yeah.
What? Just fuck off and do a joke.
The worst possible thing you could do is
the
that.
Worst possible thing so. You can do to a straight man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
No, I totally agree. I think that that's something that I don't... I agree that I don't agree with that. But I was like, God, they had Tia Carrera as the lead. Like a woman of colour. Amazing. But then they also have Wayne talking about her in the same way that he talks about a guitar in terms of She Will Be Mine.
I watched it with my flatmate and we did a double cringe. It was nightmarish. And I don't think the film has sufficient distance from that perspective of Wayne's. The film is basically like, yeah, right on, bro.
Yeah, you go get her. You go own that. But also, I have to say another character I think is not really handled that well, but who I love despite it is Stacey. I know it's wrong to be like, oh, she's just a crazy lady, but like there's something so wonderful about how bizarre she is. Like, you bought me a gun rag. It has to be one of the best lines ever.
Uh-oh, don't look, Stacy.
Where? Oh God, I made eye contact.
Psycho hose beast.
I was just trying to work out if, as played by Lara Flynn Boyle, she came after Twin Peaks. And it is after Twin Peaks, so she was doing that kind of fucking with her image thing, which is fun.
But I think that is her natural colouring as well, and it's so beautiful.
I know, she looks delicious. Although she reminded me... I say although, not although. She looks delicious and she reminded me of Anna Chancellor.
Oh, yes! Well, also the slight kind of desperation... as well of
oh yeah, I guess
Anna,
yeah,
and Four Weddings,
duck face, yeah,
yeah. No, I love Stacey. I love like I kind of I love like crazy ladies in films. Just
Who's your favorite crazy lady in a film?
My favorite crazy lady in a film, Glenn Close. I just love like when you see characters that are. I mean, one that's a bit controversial, but I love her, is Amy in Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Probably too lowbrow for you, but yeah, I think...
No, like, I've seen it, thank you.
See them being... Sorry. See them, like... Seeing women, like, be, like, terrible and incredibly destructive in a way that you normally only see male characters, I find that really appealing.
Yeah, or, like, Maggie Smith in that Alan Bennett thing where she takes a shit in his drive.
The lady in the van.
Lady in the van.
I think
is that what you meant?
That. Yeah. Yeah, that's what the van woman. Maggie in a van. When she paints her car with cake. Do you remember that?
She paints her car. I haven't seen it. I haven't fucking seen it. She paints her car with cake.
There's a bit where she's painting her van yellow, but there's cake in the paint. So it's just, all I can think is like she's painting cake onto her van. It's wrong.
That sounds really bad, but Alan Bennett is a national treasure or something.
Don't you want to open your present?
If it's a severed head, I'm going to be very upset.
Open it.
Okay.
Do you want to know some facts about Wayne's World?
Yes, I do. And I've got a couple of interesting factoids for you as well.
Oh, cool.
You go first.
Well, Mike Myers is notoriously difficult to work with. And it had this film had a female director, Penelope Spheris, who called Mike Myers a bastard. Because apparently during the Bohemian Rhapsody bit, where they're all headbanging, Mike Myers just kept saying,
right.
My neck hurts. This won't look funny. Which to me isn't like, I don't think that's like that bastardy, but I like the fact that happened.
Yeah, I like that. My fact also pertains to Penelope Spheris, so we'll
oh, what
get
is
on
it?
Her.
I don't know that much about her.
Okay, so I was looking her up a little bit today, and I found out that she directed a film, her first film, when she was starting out, with Richard Pryor.
What?
Yeah, her first film is with Richard Pryor, and let me tell you what it's called, Elizabeth.
What's it called, Casper?
It's called Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales.
Oh, God, no.
The film... Wait a second. Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales, the film for homosexuals.
No, you're kidding.
No. the plot on... The plot on IMDb says a white man goes on trial for having raped a black woman. So it's a comedy. And...
It's not funny.
No, it's not funny. It's not funny. Absolutely
it's
not funny. Well, no, not at all. So the plot of it, as she explains in the Marc Maron podcast, you listen to it?
Yeah, well, I skip his bits.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's so boring. Also, don't tell us about rehab.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear your music. And enough about Lorne Michaels.
Oh my God, so much about Lorne Michaels and so
Who
much
produced
about
this the film. But anyway, sorry.
Fucking Second City, constant Second City. Ugh. Anyway, so she's on Marc Maron's podcast and she's completely baller. I love her.
Oh yeah.
But she's talking about how Richard Pryor was basically coked up to the max and wanted to make this film, Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales, the film for homosexuals. I don't know why it's called the film for homosexuals.
No.
Anyway, yeah. And it's about this white man who commits this crime. So I think he raped a black woman, but loads of stuff changed in the writing over the time of the filming. And he gets judged by a black judge and a black jury. And that's the story.
What and is he guilty? Like, what happens?
We don't know, and the film's never been seen. Penelope Spheris made it. Yeah, she made it, and then Richard Pryor was furious and tore it up. And then she put it back together again, and they showed it to Bill Cosby, and Bill Cosby bought it. So... I've just been going out of my mind.
Wait. So it's yeah. Bill Cosby bought it, like he owns it in his house?
Apparently. Like, yeah.
Well, there's one copy of this film and it's in Bill Cosby's possession.
Yeah, and like what artist just buys somebody else's film?
Like why? Well.
Yeah.
I really want to watch it now.
Well, I'm desperate to watch it, but I suspect we'll never see it. But anyway, that's what I wanted to tell you about her.
There's only one way we could watch it.
How? Oh, by phoning up Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know what to say about Penelope Spheris now.
No, I know. She's amazing.
And what's worse is it sounds like it's kind of like her baby. It sounds like that was like her passion project. that she was just desperately trying to get made. And
no, it, well, they it, wouldn't it wasn't.
Her,
it
they
was
wouldn't let her show it.
Hey.
It was her fight.
It wasn't. She had her passion project later on that sounded really interesting. She was a documentarian and she made documentaries about musicians, like the underground film culture of LA and all of that.
I feel like you've just managed to make Wayne's World highbrow.
I'm really sorry.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hello.
So Garth, how do you like being in a real studio?
It's like a new pair of underwear, you know? At first it's constrictive, but after a while it becomes a part of you.
Can I tell you my notes on Wayne's World? Garth being scared of the camera. That was one of my notes.
No, that was funny.
Oh, I do like how Wayne is like a celebrity in that everybody's like, hey, Wayne, aren't you that guy with the cable access show? In the same way that like in Frasier Crane is a celebrity. And like, hey, I recognize your voice from the radio. Like, I love that that's the rule of the universe.
That was good. Also, didn't you like the way that... that Garth, in his body language, you know when he's doing the drumming scene in the shop?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like his mannerisms purposefully mimic Harpo Marx, didn't you find?
Mm-hmm.
Whoops, sorry, what have I done? What?
Well, another of my notes.
It certainly felt to me like a conscious wink to the stylings of Harpo Marx.
I'm sure it probably was.
Oh, I don't know. But when you're watching this film, Elizabeth, Lizzie, do you, like, when you're watching it, are your thoughts, wow, I'm having so much fun, this is the best way to spend my time?
It's more like at the moment, I would say it's more like a comforting hug. It's a nostalgia trip for me. But I do think it is like a really... well-executed, character-led comedy. Like, I think there's a lot of great moments in it. But I don't think... I'm not watching it and thinking... But you know what? Actually, I do watch it and think, this is really special.
Do you?
Another of my notes was, I always read contracts like Wayne.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like what you did here.
Anyway. That scene is so good when they're reading the contract and Dana Carvey beckons the camera down towards the ground and talks to it at floor level.
Just Dana Carvey in general, apparently Dana Carvey, one of the reasons he and Mike Myers allegedly fell out was because Dana Carvey's just better, I think. And Mike Myers knew that. Like, I think Dana Carvey, when he's doing Foxy in the diner, it's just like his physicality is incredible. Did you watch it and think this is a waste of my time?
No, I didn't. I enjoyed elements of it, but there were also sort of, there were big moments of kind of blank space and just drawn out gags that went nowhere and scenes that ended abruptly and just characters who weren't, some secondary characters who weren't interesting or good, but...
And you don't like that?
And I don't like that, but I really enjoyed all of the kind of formal playfulness of it. So I loved that when they talk to camera.
Yeah, it's very meta in moments.
Yeah, it was super meta, and the way Garth and Wayne, the main character's called Wayne. What's his name? The main guy in Wayne's World.
Just another white man.
Yeah. Let's call him Jeff. The main guy in Wayne's World, Jeff.
Wayne World, starring Jeff. The stories of Jeff in Wayne World.
Yes. So I liked Wayne World. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. So Jeff and Garth are the only ones who are allowed to talk to camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's that scene where Al Bundy talks to camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really funny.
That's the granddad from Modern Family, I think.
From Modern Family. Oh, I don't watch Modern Family.
Well, you will.
Oh shit, what, like a whole season?
Have you done? Yeah, there's been like 5-6 seasons. See you in a month.
Uh-huh. Daily reminder, Thursday, purchase Feeble Public Access Cable Show and exploit it. Whoa, I feel sorry for whoever that is.
We should move on to camera person, because that was our highbrow. I find it quite difficult to say highbrow. Highbrow. Viewing. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, closing remarks on Wayne's World. We've done it. That's it. It's over.
Zang.
Party.
Camera person, go.
Okay, Camera Person, which is a film that doesn't have a general release date yet, so is really fun for our listeners to hear about, because about 50 people have seen this film. Camera Person is an award-winning documentary by Kirsten Johnson, which I feel like is also the name of the woman in 30 Rock, in Third Rock from the Sun, but...
She's Kirsten Johnston. Johnson.
Ah, this is... Okay, thank you so much. This is Kirsten Johnston. Okay.
They're both very tall.
And both tall. Interesting. Yeah. And white.
Yeah.
So, Kirsten Johnston, the tall white documentarian, has made a film about her experiences as a camera person, filming documentaries for the likes of Michael Moore, Help Me Out Here... Laura Poitras,
yeah,
and various Michael other Moore, Michael Moore Laura, and Laura Poitras and Michael Moore and anyway, and so she shows in her film elements of scenes and kind of off cuts from these films that didn't make it into the actual edit of these perhaps more celebrated documentaries, and she presents them as a memoir of her life. Have I got that about right?
Yeah, spot on.
And I thought it was interesting. What did you think?
I thought it was, I mean, I'd never seen anything like that before. And I was really, I find that when I do watch documentaries, because I have a lot of friends who work in the documentary world, so I hear about good documentaries, don't often go see them. But when I do, I'm always like, wow, that was incredible. That was the best thing I've ever seen. And then my friends who work in documentary will be like, that was so basic. That was the most obvious thing. So I'm just kind of, it's like somebody who's going to ballet for the first time, but they're actually going to a musical. But they're like, oh my God, it was so brilliant. So
yeah, like when I went to opera for the first time and I was like, wow, that was incredible. They sang so loud. Am I right?
How did they learn all those notes? But I thought it was unbelievable, astounding. I think it was so personal and I was really sort of moved by it on several occasions. And also every single clip, which the film kind of goes all over the place, but yeah, it seems to be quite sort of, well, it's very well sort of put together in that you will be having sort of fun moments and then you'll suddenly be in war torn moments and then you'll probably suddenly be in like very kind of family orientated moments. Then you'll be in just like outstandingly giddy moments of, I don't know, dancing men. And then, so it was very, every single clip was something that was intriguing and I wanted to know more about the backstory of it.
Yeah, exactly. I think as a compilation of sort of incredible snatched moments sort of seized here and there, it's really remarkable and kind of and very touching how she manages to put a personal spin on all of this footage, which just to explain a little bit further is drawn from documentaries about war-torn landscapes and crime investigations. And so this is some pretty hard hitting footage that she still manages to kind of, fashion into, sort of a wider, tapestry.
I love the moments where you see, say there's a documentary they made about a man that was killed really brutally, and but you have the guys sort of behind the scenes almost bringing in the evidence, and they, one of them's like giggling because he's got like a cup, he's holding a cup between his teeth, like a plastic cup. He's like, oh, you got me with a cup in my mouth. And it's things like that that obviously would never make it into a documentary because they're not going to like serve the story in any way. But that it's seeing them is really wonderful, but also because it kind of makes you realize that obviously that's what life is like. There will be funny moments even in like brutal court cases about terrible deaths.
Yeah, that's such a good point, is how she'll find a little touch in a moment that's far more wide-ranging, but she'll find an inkling of humanity or some funny moment, right? That really reveals kind of greater tensions that are at play and get to the core of her subject's you know, personhood and to their truth. God, that sounds corny. To their truth.
No, it does. This is their true.
My theory is that Americans exist to the degree that they're being filmed or believe themselves to be filmed. Yeah, this is the natural condition.
I also find that I'm terrible in watching things that don't have story. Like I really need narrative.
Yeah.
And it didn't have a narrative, but it was just so compelling. I felt like I really embarrassed myself in the Q&A, Caspar.
You didn't, it's fine. Although, I mean, go on.
Well, Caspar and I were at the same screening and there was a Q&A with Kirsten after the film. And there's a scene in the film where there's, no spoilers, but there's a baby who's not very well, and I blame Jeremy because I really wanted to know what, because there's a lot of questions that are left unanswered by the film, and I really wanted to know what happened to this baby, and I feel like everybody would probably want to know what happened to the baby. So Jeremy was like, "Are you going to ask?" And I was like, "Okay." Okay, and I would never normally ask in Q&As because I kind of have a rule that you don't ask questions in Q&As because always the people asking questions in Q&As just actually want to tell like a personal anecdote and then go, what did you think about that? I didn't want to do that. But I did, I asked it, but and it was like they handed me the mic and my voice just sounded really loud and high. And I was like, did the baby die? And then she gave like a, the answer that obviously makes sense, which was, you know, the whole point of the film, the whole fucking point of the fucking film, idiot, is you're not supposed to know these things, but like use your fucking brain.
Yeah. And I think if you watch the scene closely, you can, she was like, I think if you watch it, you can see
that. I think like if you're able to like use your eyes and in any kind of critical capacity, you'd be aware.
You'll have seen exactly what my spin is on that. Yeah, basically.
Like I felt told off. And then when she said that, when she was like, because she said it like, I think, you know, anyone who knows anything about babies will know what happened. I laughed out of like weird nervousness. And the woman at the end of the row like turned and like looked at me like, what the fuck is wrong?
Well, when she said that, I was like, well, I've got a baby and I'm none the wiser. Absolutely no idea what happened to that baby. But then, Lizzie, I don't need answers from films, you know? That's not what I'm there for.
Actually, nobody... We never go to our own trauma. We are just putting things inside of ourselves.
Yeah.
By thinking this is something what we need to do and it's a work. But it's really heavy work.
Can I ask, though, is Michael Moore considered... Is Michael Moore, like... Is he, like, good? Is he considered good?
I feel like he's the kind of trashy,
accessible documentarian.
Yeah, he is basically, I think.
And is Louis Theroux the same?
Louis Theroux, I don't know. Louis Theroux is sort of a bit cult, I think. I don't know. I'm not a documentaries expert. I would say that Louis Theroux is more physically attractive than Michael Moore, certainly.
Okay, and that affects, that makes his documentaries more culty.
Well, it's hugely important, yeah.
I saw him in the street once.
Did you?
Yeah, he's tall.
Ugh, he's so lanky, I love it.
Yeah, he's very handsome.
I was going to say he looks a bit like your husband, and I've just realised that I'm sort of compromising myself.
Ooh, he's taken.
She sees everything around you. She's totally blind. That's the image of the philosopher who falls in the well, is it?
Yes.
While looking at the star.
Can I say something that's probably going to sound a bit twatty about camera person?
Please.
And you can, and then you can swoop in and bat off my ridiculous comment.
Not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I found her perspective to be so sort of furiously and engagingly and sort of in a way that I'd never seen before, so feminine and so feminist. In Camera Person, I found that really startling. I wonder if you thought that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting what she was saying in the Q&A. She said that she was able to have access to a lot of places because she was a woman, and that she wasn't threatening, and that but at the same time, because she's very tall, she can kind of also, she looks like she can take care of herself. She said smaller female documentarians or camera people, camera ladies, camera women can...
camera chicks, I think, is the word.
Camera chicks, camera... I'm not going to say camera hoes. I did it. I said camera hoes.
Camera broads.
Camera broads can be sort of diminished somewhat, which I found great, really inspiring and very happy about that. It's just funny because that's not what my experience of being one of the only women in a male-dominated industry has been like at all. So I was a bit like, oh, great for you.
Yeah. But, why don't you make a film about it then?
Yeah. Yeah.
I woke up sometimes and I'm hearing boys saying, like, you need to do something for women who have been raped. And I'm saying, like, yes, I will.
It's just the way for me, the way, and this is what I think was feminine about it, but then I'm some bloke and I don't know, is the way that she does hone in on detail and on little things going on behind the scenes, where I feel like a male perspective is always going to be much more grandstanding and trying to capture the big thing going on. She's sneakily looking at a little thing happening sort of contemporaneously. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think there was a real sort of gentleness to the way that, yeah, to the moments that she got. There's a bit where they're talking to her and Michael Moore, the trash doc dude, talking to an American soldier who's been in Iraq, and he starts crying. And I did think, I wonder if it had been a male camera person, he would have opened up in the same way. And I hope he would, because there's no reason why he shouldn't. But, and just the way, I guess, that the way that women and men were talking to her, there was a real, yeah, and people seem to be very vulnerable. But I don't, to be honest, I don't know if that, because I haven't seen enough, I don't know if that's more feminine or if that's just her way. Like, I feel like she's probably, maybe potentially, putting it out there, it's that because she's a camera person, she's used to finding the unusual details in a shot, whereas
yeah,
in the edit those would get lost because they're like, well, we don't need this guy in the background smiling.
Yes, it's just completely related to her job and not at all her gender.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I definitely think obviously a female perspective in those situations, yeah, is going to be different to a male one. But I wouldn't be able to tell you how that would affect it.
I was just so touched by her credits, which I thought had such humanity and were so generous. You know, I've never had that looking at a credit sequence before, but she thanks the women who help look after my children. I thought that was just amazing.
Yeah.
I've just never seen that, and I thought it was so generous and so respectful of the fact that so much work goes into things behind the scenes and goes unacknowledged, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially because I think, again, that's probably potentially more a female thing to have that in your head to think about. You know, I feel like women get asked more, especially like working women get asked more like, who's looking after your kids right now? Like that, whereas a guy would never be asked that because the assumption would probably be his wife. So for her, it's probably like, well, it's much more at the front of her mind, like, I can't raise these children on my own. I need these people to help me. I'm obviously going to thank them. Whereas a guy potentially would not think the same way. I hope that they would, but they might not. I don't feel like men are often asked like, yeah, how do you manage being the CEO of Facebook and having children?
Oh my God, absolutely never. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Colin Farrell doing The Lobster wasn't asked how he managed to make the film and have kids.
No.
I don't know why I picked Colin Farrell.
I like that. Just on The Lobster. It's a real concern behind the scenes at The Lobster currently. Everyone's wondering who's looking after Colin Farrell's kids. Jonathan Ross asks the hard questions.
Yeah, we need to see that though.
I know, I agree. I think so much of a film, you engage with the actors and you engage with the director and you engage with the score. Yeah, go on. You engage with the score. Then there's just this list of names at the end of the film, like Focus Puller and Grip. And it's like, you don't know what those people do, but they are just as important as the director and the actors, and if not more.
Not quite as important.
Well, I think, to be honest, personally, I think the actors are just like another part of the crew. I think the director, yeah sure.
Actors are pawns.
But actors are just, they're like a tiny part of the machine.
Yeah. Director top, writer next, director of photography next, and then actors way at the bottom.
Yep. I just nearly burped. Sorry, that would have been very lowbrow. Oh, God.
look at us just effortlessly doing two films by women in our first episode.
I don't know if Kirsten Johnson would really want to be sort of...
associated with Wayne's World?
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was thinking, why isn't there, you know, I'd love to see the camera person sort of take on Wayne's World, like the shots that didn't make it.
Oh, that would be so good. Yes. Just Tia Carrera being fed up backstage.
Yeah. Like I just watched, have you seen Wet Hot American Summer?
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. So I just watched the documentary about that. And it's as good as the film. If not better.
Yeah.
Why doesn't every single film have to make an hour-long documentary at the same time as they're making the film so you can just get, like, bonus footage? And I know that's, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's not really.
Well, but all of those people are really funny and intelligent, whereas if you made a kind of behind-the-scenes film about, like, Magic Mike XXL, you're not going to have such a good time, are you?
Disagree! Did you... are you watching Stranger Things, right?
Well, yeah, I've watched the first three episodes.
Same, I'm only on the third. So I was then thinking, why, in my stupid thought of like, why doesn't every film have to do this? I was then like, how funny it would be if you had like Schindler's List, the LOLs doc, behind the scenes LOLs, like obviously some things it would really severely undermine the film. Barry Lyndon, like Joe.
but for films that aren't comedies, instead of having a blooper reel, they should just have a really sad reel at the end where things like just like
just people looking really sad.
More people die, or yeah, just a like extended funeral take.
Yeah, just the actors eating like really bad food and like being sleepy.
Yeah, an actor splitting their nail and crying a bit.
There's the Stanley Kubrick one for The Shining, which is brilliant. And then that's not a happy film, but that's really good because it's even more, just makes that film even more intriguing because you're seeing sort of like the set when things are moving around it, and it's, you're seeing like how cavernous it was. And there's Jack Nicholson just like, oh, I'm not going to bother to read the script because it's just going to change again. Sorry for my terrible Jack Nicholson impression.
No, I was just going to compliment you on it. It was very good.
Don't, because I feel like everyone has to compliment. Since Rob Brydon, when someone does a, when anyone does a impression, everyone has to be like, oh, it's very good.
Mm.
I don't know why, since Rob Brydon is just the first person I thought of.
Yeah, no, you're right. Have you heard my Woody Allen? Hang on, here's my Woody Allen. I don't like eating in restaurants. What do you think?
So thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Okay, and we'll pick something to listen to watch for next week.
Please, can it not be one of the like trilogy, blue, red, white? White, red, blue, the French.
Why not?
Trilogy.
Those are really good. Wonderful. Three Colors Red is one of my favourite films. It's beautiful. Have you not seen it? You obviously haven't seen it.
Walked right into this.
God.
It just looks really long.
But you'd probably like the fashion in it. She wears lots of red clothes.
Oh. You'd like the dresses.
You love fashion. Don't you do a fashion blog or something?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
It's you can do one of the looks for your fashion blog. There we are. What are you going to pick for me?
Oh, for you. Well, I was thinking I want to try and find something a bit new-ish.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of tempted to make you read a book. Maybe a Twilight or a Deborah Harkness. Do you know?
Yeah,
Deborah
that could
Harkness?
Be fun. No,
there's a Deborah Harkness novel about a witch that falls in love with a vampire.
For fuck's sake!
And they time travel.
Oh my god!
That's all the time we have for this week. Until then, good night.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, Garth. It's Wayne's World. Wayne's World. Party time. Excellent. We're clear.
Should we sign off there then?
Yeah, let's stop recording, but I want to talk to you after because I got gossip. Say bye. Bye.
Bye.